Welcome to installment 92 of Sefer HaMitzvot and the Rambam. Today's portion contains seven commandments. Prohibition 52 against intermarriage, 53, 54, and 55 regulating marriage with the nations of Ammon, Moab, Mitzrayim, and Esav after they have converted, Prohibition 54 relating to the marriage of an illegitimate child, 360 somewhat relating to the marriage of someone with mutilated sexual organs, and Prohibition 361 relating to castration. Prohibition number 52 is the prohibition against intermarriage. This prohibition is derived from the 7th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, verse 3, where the state of Eloisis Chateinbom, one shall not intermarry with them, that you shall not give your daughter to their son, nor their daughter take for your son. Strictly speaking, the biblical commandment applies only when the relationship has been in the context of a marital relationship. Although technically there is no such thing as a marriage between a Jew and a non-Jew, any such attempt would be invalid. Nevertheless, as the Talmud says in the Veda Zara, relations in such a manner being similar to marriage are prohibited by the Torah. Should there be witnesses, and not only witnesses of the marital act, but even witnesses that they are living in such a marital situation, and after the Jewish partner involved has been warned, the penalty would be malchus or lashing. Should their relations be done in public, with public knowledge, then regardless of whether it is done in the marital context or not, then the law is kanoim poigin bei. Zealots have the right, and perhaps the obligation, according to some commentaries, of killing both parties involved, as the story is related in Chumash of Pinchas and Zimri, where this exactly happened, that Pinchas killed Zimri, who was publicly flouting his relations, marital relations, with a woman from Midian. This punishment has certain conditions. One is not allowed to instruct a person to carry out this punishment. Halacha ve'ein meidin kein, although this is the halacha. And furthermore, the Rambam even says in his legal code that a person that does such an act is praiseworthy. Nevertheless, we cannot tell him to do so. Furthermore, he is only allowed to do so when it is a public act, and also when both parties are actually in the middle of the act. Should it be even one moment afterwards, he would be considered a murderer for killing someone that had previously been involved in such an act. Should there be no lashes administered, or should the death penalty not be carried out, then the law is that the person is punished by kores, a cutting off of the soul. And as it seems clear from the commentaries, this applies whether it was done in the marital context or even not in the marital context. Nevertheless, the punishment is kores, a cutting off of the soul, as we learn from the book of Malachi, from the prophets, Kichil Yehuda Kedesh Hashem Asher Ohev, that Yehuda, meaning the Jewish people, has profaned the holiness of Hashem as a result of their sexual acts with non-Jewish women. The Zohar states further that a person that has relations with a non-Jew is driving away the Shekhinah, the divine presence from the world. And even more so, the Rambam says that there is a loss, a hefzid, in this mitzvah, which is not in any other of the incestual or prohibited sexual relationships. That although the other relations might be prohibited, and the child that is born might be illegitimate, nevertheless, the child is still Jewish, which is not the case. In a case of intermarriage or sexual relations with a non-Jew, this is the only way, as the Rogachev is quoted as having said, the only way of making a Jew into a non-Jew. A Jew could never be converted, because even if he would convert, God forbid, nevertheless, he still remains Jewish, he still has a Jewish soul, which is not the case. When a non-Jewish child is born as a product of a Jewish parent, this is the only way of turning the Jew, which would have been born, into a non-Jew. The father will pass away, and then the child will remain not Jewish for all generations thereafter. And although it is painful to belabor the point, it is obvious that this which the sworn enemies of the Jewish people have been unable to accomplish as a result of physical force, many Jewish people have unfortunately brought it upon themselves in spiritual decimation as a result of intermarriage. that it is not enough to refuse to have children. In zero population growth and so on, as we discussed under the mitzvah of to be fruitful and multiplying, but in addition, large numbers of Jewish people and potential Jewish souls are being lost in the hordes of intermarried couples. There are even many cases when the couples think that they are not intermarrying since the one of the parties has converted, whereas in reality the conversion is not valid. So in effect, this is another case of intermarriage. The details of this law are discussed in Tractates of Eda Zara and Sanhedrin. Prohibition 53 singles out the nations of Ammon and Moab from all of the non-Jewish nations as far as their treatment even after they have converted to Judaism, become Gerei Tzedek, rightful converts according to Jewish law. The book of Deuteronomy tells us that they shall never enter into the congregation of God, meaning they should never enter in a marriage situation into the Jewish people. And this is Prohibition 53, not to allow a descendant of Ammon or Moab, these nations, even after having converted, to enter into the Jewish people through marriage. Our sages have told us that this prohibition applies only to male members of these nations, but not to female members. As we see Ruth, the Moabite, was a descendant of Moab, and she converted into Judaism, and later on entered into the ranks of the Jewish people. And even King David descended from Ruth, as our sages say. Should there be a marriage relationship entered into with a proselyte from the nations of Ammon and Moab, together with another Jew, both of them get lashes by Torah decree. The reason why these nations are singled out is given explicitly in the Chumash. The reason given is that when the Jews were coming out of the land of Egypt, that they refused to give us bread and water. In addition, they hired Bilam in order to curse the Jewish people. Later on, of course, Bilam was unsuccessful, could not curse the Jewish people, but instead gave them the advice to bring non-Jewish women, which eventually resulted in another punishment for the Jewish people. Prohibition 54 and Prohibition 55 are both very similar. Just as the nations of Ammon and Moab may not enter into the ranks of the Jewish people through marriage for all generations, so too we have a similar idea regarding the descendants of Esau and the descendants of the Egyptians. However, they are only prohibited from three generations from entering into the Jewish people through marriage. After that, we ourselves have a prohibition to not allow them to enter into the Jewish people. And this is Prohibition 54. Late Sasai Vadaimi, one should not despise or treat as an abomination anyone from the nation of Edom, referring to the descendants of Esau. And as the verse describes the reason, Yachichohu, because he is your brother. They are descendants of our brother Esau, the brother of Yaakov. And so too, Prohibition 55, was the Sai of Mitzri. One is not allowed to despise a descendant of the Egyptians. And the reason is, since we lived in their land, we may not despise them forever. And this is, of course, treating a case only after they have converted, that even after conversion, just as Ammon and Moab are forbidden from marrying into the Jewish people, so too these nations, but only for three generations. After three, they are allowed. After all of the terrible things that were done to us in Egypt, and also Esau and his descendants, why was there such a distinction placed about between Ammon and Moab and Edom and Mitzrayim? The Chinuch explains that we see from this that sometimes, even after a large number of misdeeds have been done, one tremendously serious misdeed can outweigh them. And this was the misdeed of Ammon and Moab in their viciousness in refusing even to give us food, even for money when we came out of Egypt. Such an extremely inhuman treatment of us was even worse in a way than everything that was done to us by Esau and his descendants and also the Egyptians. The Rambam gives a historical note, which is very relevant to Jewish law, in his legal code, that Sennacherib, the king of Ashur, mixed up the populations of the entire world in order to consolidate his kingdom and to take away a feeling of security among his subjects. He moved vast populations around from one area to another. Therefore, after the time of Sennacherib, these last three laws regarding these specific nations are no longer in application, since we do not know which particular nation any particular person is from. And even in the land of Egypt, the people living there are not identical with the original Egyptians that lived there. Therefore, any righteous convert, a Ger Tzedek, is allowed to marry into the Jewish people, since he or she comes from the majority and is therefore allowed to enter. Prohibition number 354 is a prohibition regarding a mamzer entering into a marital relation with a Jew. A mamzer in the Jewish law is very strictly defined as an illegitimate child, and not even an out-of-wedlock child. Technically speaking, a mamzer is only in a case where there was a prohibited relationship between the two parties involved, a relationship which is punishable by kores. For example, any of the incestual relationships, or an adulterous relationship. The child is considered a mamzer, and this child is not allowed, whether male a mamzer or female a mamzeres, is not allowed to marry with another Jewish person. One who does so is punishable by lashes. This has become a very unfortunate byproduct of the lack of observance of various Jewish laws today, as could come into application in a case where marital partners divorce civilly according to civil law and do not get a get. According to Jewish law, they could very well still be married. And therefore, when the woman remarries, she is technically entering into an adulterous relationship, and this would affect the status of the child. This is a very widespread problem today, and certainly a Rav should be consulted for advice on how to handle such a problem. This commandment, as well as the previous three, are discussed in the 8th chapter of Yevamos and the end of the tractate Kedushin. Prohibition number 360 deals with another category of person who may not enter into a marriage relationship. And this is a man who is a betzua daka, who has crushed testicles, or a krus shevcha, his member is cut. As the Rambam adds, the condition in Sefer HaMitzvos that it is destroyed to such an extent that it is impossible for him to bear children. Also in this case, if after kiddushin or betrothal, sexual relations have taken place, the punishment is lashes. This commandment is discussed in the 9th chapter of Yevamos. The final commandment in today's portion is Prohibition 361, the prohibition against castration. And this applies whether both to human beings and to animals. After describing in the book of Leviticus the various categories of animals which may not be offered in the temple for sacrifices, that their testicles were crushed, either by hand or by an instrument, or cut or pulled loose, the verse concludes, "Uba'aretzachem losasukein, you shall not do so in your land." The Talmud asks, in the chapter Shmena Shratzim, in the tractate Shabbos, how do we know it is prohibited to castrate a man? And it quotes this verse. And further, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, that even if you do one after another, and he gives an example, if something was already turned into chametz and brought as a meal offering, and then someone turns it into chametz a second time, makes it even more chametz thick, more leavened, both of them transgress a prohibition. And so too, if someone has been castrated, their sexual organs have been mutilated, and then someone mutilates them more, then both of them transgress the prohibition. And the Gemara concludes that if it was cut only slightly, incompletely, it is prohibited. Why does the verse have to mention Nosuk, that they are completely cut, that is also prohibited? We would know that automatically. However, this comes to teach you that even if one after another, if it was first incompletely cut and then completely cut, then both of them are transgressing the prohibition and are punishable by lashes. The Rambam apparently brings this discussion in order to show us that the Talmud says specifically that one gets lashes for this, and therefore it is a biblical prohibition. Many people do not realize that a sterilization procedure, a tubal ligation, and even perhaps a hysterectomy, as there are various opinions as whether this prohibition applies to women as well, whether these could be halachic questions. And so too, the sterilization or the spaying of an animal also is possible only after a Rav has been consulted in order to determine that this is an exception to the rule. Another important case of which many people are unaware is in prostate operations. Often certain tubes are cut which are essential to the reproductive process and therefore also considered sirus or a part of a castration or sterilization and therefore prohibited by this law. Many doctors today say that a prostate operation can be done without cutting these tubes. Therefore, certainly a Rav should first be consulted before any such operation is embarked upon. Thank you for tuning into the daily portion of Sefer HaMitzvahs. For more information or to sponsor a Shir, contact Sichas in English at 718-778-5436, and please join us again tomorrow.